So this week's parsha is Parshas Balosla, and Parshas Balosla is action-packed. It's full of fascinating ideas, and the Jewish people are getting ready to enter the land of Israel. This is before next week's parsha, before the sin of the spies. And what I was thinking of doing is talking a little bit about what happens at the very end of the parsha. The famous or infamous interaction between Moshe and Miriam and Aaron and what they talk about regarding Miriam and Aaron regarding Moshe. But then as I thought about it some more, and I was intrigued about the fact that the Torah talks about this this interaction and highlights Miriam, who we haven't heard about in a while since the last time the Torah mentioned or invoked Miriam was at the Yam Suf after they crossed the sea, and everyone sang the Az Yashir, and Miriam took the women to sing and to dance, and all of a sudden here in the end of in this week's parsha, when it talks about what happens and this interaction between Miriam and Aaron and Moshe. So the Torah tells us the following. It says, we've got the exact words. Yeah, so it says, but to Rabir Miriam Aaron b'Moshe, that Miriam and Aaron speak about Moshe, right? And there's a whole discussion. What exactly did they say? In what way are they critical of Moshe? And Hashem tells the three of them to separate. He wants to speak with them privately. And then we're told that Miriam is she has saras vayif and Aaron, and Miriam Aaron turns to Miriam and he sees that she has saras, and Aaron says to Moshe, you have to pray for her, and Moshe prays for her and he says kel na refana refana la, and then Miriam has to go out of the camp for 7 days and they wait for her for 7 days. And the question is, this major emphasis on Miriam and her interaction with Moshe, and it made me think about that. I never really thought about this in the past. That there are four women in the Torah who, in a very significant way, influence Moshe's life. Right, there are four women who play a very significant role in Moshe's life. The first, of course, is his mother, Yocheved, and then it's his sister Miriam, and then it's the daughter of Paro, Bas Paro, we call Basya, and then the fourth is his wife, right? Is Tzipora, who's actually again the subject of whatever it exactly this criticism is of Miriam and Aaron directed towards Moshe, is the Hisha Kushita Shir Lakach, this Kushite woman who he has taken. So these four women, in a very significant way, influence Moshe's life. I just want to reflect upon that for a moment, and then maybe make a couple of connections, and then maybe show specifically why Miriam is highlighted at this moment. So the first person that we're told about, obviously in terms of the women, in terms of the connection to Moshe Rabbeinu, is of course his mother, and she's referred to as a Bas Levi. Vatar, this is back in Parsha Shmos. Vatari Shava Telet Bain, Vatero Soki Tofu. And immediately it's the mother who recognizes something very special about this child. And before Shmos struggle with what does it mean that she saw that he was good. That doesn't every mother see that her child is good? Of course. And I saw the Netziv, for example. He says that he saw that he was good in the sense that he was, although the baby's first born, the baby's very crinkly, and maybe the shape of the head is not exactly round, has to take a little bit to round out and things like that. Moshe was born physically perfect, beautiful. That's what the Netziv understands. And we know Chazal Rashi quotes that there was some glow that was emanating from Moshe when he was born. Rashi says, "The smali abai is kulo ora." that the house was full of lights, right? Some spiritual light that emanated from the child. I think others say, and I want to suggest that that she saw something very special within this child, right? Just she said that it was Yocheved who implanted. She had this faith that this child would be remarkable. And I think some of the Forshim say that the fact that he was, the reason why she was able to hide him for 3 months is that he was born super early, right? You know, some of the Forshim say that the Egyptians had like a checklist. They knew exactly when, they got the records from all the OBGYNs exactly when the Jewish women are going to deliver. And therefore, they knew his birth date. His birth date was not until, it could be Sivan, the month of Sivan, Iyar, and all of a sudden he's born Zion Adar, several months early, right? And the fact that he was born early and yet he survived and he was able to thrive, so there was something unusual. Like immediately his mother, again, had this unyielding faith and this recognition about who this her son would be and who he would become. And so I want to hold on to that for a second, but that somehow this idea of this emuna, this faith, and this hope and this understanding and this optimism, perhaps was something at this most formative age, at the very beginning of Moshe's life, that was instilled within the child. The next woman who interacts, and of course we also know that she's going to then nurse him, right? She's going to nurse him, but that leads to the second woman in his life, and the second one is Miriam, right? So the second one is right. So at a certain point, they can't hide him anymore, and his mother. Here's another involvement with Yocheved. His mother makes this teva, right, the famous ark that she prepares to properly line and to make it safe to place into the river. Vatasim basayel vatasim basuf ad svasayor. Right, she places the child at the edge of the river. And again, also hold on to that phrase al svasayor. Right, she places Moshe al svasayor. There's some very, I think, very powerful imagery of that. Okay, and then what happens next? Actually, I made a mistake. The next woman we're introduced to before we even get to Miriam is Bas Paro. Atelad Bas Paro or Chotayor, the daughter of Paro goes to bathe at the Yor, at the sea, and there's other women who are with her, and she spots this teva. She spots this basket, and she stretches forth her hands, right, to grab it. Right, she stretches forth her hand, and think about that language, right, of stretching forth her hand, where you heard that before, vis-a-vis Moshe. Batishlach asamasa vatikachel. She stretches forth her hand, and again, ama could mean her maidservant. That's one opinion, but the other famous opinion is that her hand physically was extended to grab the basket, and she sees the opens it up. Child is crying, batachmo, and she has compassion upon him. So Bas Paro, right, who's going to become his adoptive mother, she stretches forth her hand, and she has compassion, right? She hears the cries, right? She the child is crying, and she has compassion. And she understands, miladei ha'ivrim, she understands he's a Jewish child. And then now the third woman comes in. Batomer achoso, and all of a sudden the sister appears. The sister appears to Bas Paro, and she says, "Hey, lech b'karasi lach leisha meinekes. Should I call for you a woman who can nurse her? I mean, Arvios, who can batenekes leya, who can nurse the child?" So the Bas Paro daughter says, "Yeah, go." So she goes, and she who does the daughter, the sister, who does she get? Gets the mom. It's Yocheved. And Bas Paro says, "Oh, take the child and please nurse him. I'll pay you for it." And then when the child gets older, it was brought back to Bas Paro by Hila Levain, right? And she became for him as a son, and she gives him the name Moshe Kiminamayim Mishisiyo. And that's it. So in these like, I don't know how many psukim is this, and these eight psukim I just read, we have three women who are playing a very prominent role in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. His mother, his adoptive mother, the daughter of Paro, and his sister. And I think if you just pause for a moment and just think about this very brief description, you see right from the start the influence that these women are going to have on Moshe Rabbeinu. So first you have his mother, right, who clearly has sees the potential, right? She understands the possibilities, and one can, I think, can argue can appreciate the fact that Moshe is going to have that vision, right? He too is going to see the possibilities, right? He too, we've explained in the past, and actually in this week's part, in the parsha of Shemos, he's the one who tries to get the Jews to rebel. He's the one, right? The next story is him going out and, you know, and killing the Egyptian who's saving who's hurting, harming the Jew. He's the one who interacts with those two Jews who are arguing. And some of the Mephoshim point out he's trying to get the Jews to start a rebellion, to assert their rights. And so, you know, Moshe has that same vision as his mother has in terms of seeing the potential and standing up for his people, and it's Moshe then who's able to confront Paro later on, right? To have that ultimately, to have that conviction to go to Paro and to stand before him and to demand the release of his people. Like, I want to suggest that maybe that was from the very beginning that was imparted to him from his mother. In addition to that, I think a very strong connection between Moshe Rabbeinu and specifically his mother is and this is a theme that's going to come up again and again. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to see is always associated with the Mayim, with the water, right? Time and again, there we see these Moshe's as a baby is placed in the water, right? And then Moshe is going to have to strike the water when it comes to the plagues. I skipped one. The Moshe's at the well, right? Moshe, when he's going to meet the fourth woman in his life, is Sipora, right? He encounters her at a place of water, and then after the plagues, of course, and the Kriyas Yamsuf, and it's so interesting, right? The Torah says here, where does his mother place him? Al Sfas Hayor, right, on the bank of the river. And I said, where have you heard that phrase before? So if you look in Parshas B'Shalach, and the truth of the matter is, we say this every morning in davening, the Psuki de Zimra, Vayosha Hashem Vayom Hu Es Yisrael Miyam Mitzrayim, Vayar Es Yisrael Mitzrayim Meis Al Sfas Hayam. Right? So it's not the exact same terminology, but very similar. It's the Egyptians who were trying to kill the Jewish babies, Al Sfas Hayor. It's now the Egyptians who are dead, Al Sfas Hayam, and because of Moshe. Right, because of Moshe, right, the mother saving Moshe. So now van Nahapachu, things are turned upside down, and now it's the Egyptians who are the perpetrators, the one who are trying to lead this genocide and to kill these Jewish children. They're the ones. That it's not Moshe. Moshe is standing proud on the other side. He has emerged from the water, and now it's the Egyptians who have sunk deep into the water. I think that's also something very interesting and very significant. It's also interesting, you know, that our rabbis say, they ask the question, this is the Gemara talks about this, what was Basia doing at the river? So the simple explanation is she was going to bathe. And in fact, that's, I forget who says this, one of the Mephoshim says that's why Yocheved placed him in the water. Because you can ask the question, what was she thinking? Placing a child in the water, how's the child going to survive? is going to die right away. He can't survive in the water. The answer is no. She simply put him in the water because she knew that the Egyptian women bathed at the water. And she was hoping that what happened was going to happen. That one of the women, she didn't necessarily know, was going to be the boss Paro, the daughter of Paro. But so someone would see this baby and have compassion and rescue the child. And that's why Miriam is there to watch, because again she's hoping some Egyptian woman's going to take her, and then hopefully Mabel should be able to continue to track and see where the baby where he winds up. But Chazal say the reason why she go down to the river to bathe, so they pick up right in her word the name is Basya. Right, which is Bat Yaka, the daughter of God, that she goes to the river to convert. Right? She's going to the mikvah. That's why she's going to the river. That she's becoming a Jew. She's embracing God, and if that's the case, so it's so interesting that Moshe is raised by this woman who embraced the Jewish people. Who does he wind up marrying? He also marries a woman who's not originally Jewish, right? And who also, obviously clings to and connects and becomes a part of the Jewish people. And something within Moshe finds it very inspiring and very transformative. And it's Moshe who ultimately leads this conversion process of the entire Jewish people. Transforming them from slaves to being Avdei Hashem, servants of God, and standing before God at Sinai and accepting the Torah. Again, what I'm trying to stress, I'm just trying to show and demonstrate that you see these women in Moshe's life, who I believe play this very prominent role in shaping who Moshe became, and the leader that he was, and the values that he held, and the strength that he had, and the vision. It's being being molded and shaped by these various women in his life, and then of course the fourth woman who plays an influence in his life is his own wife, right? It's Sipora, and there he encounters her at the well. But the major story that we have with Sipora. Is Tipora, and again, it's a very difficult story. It's very hard to understand exactly what is taking place. But when Moshe makes his way back to Egypt after the whole encounter with God at the burning bush, so we're told the following: Vayikach Moshe as ishto. Moshe takes his wife as banav. Vayarkivim al chamor. He plays them on the donkey. Vayashav artzim Mitzrayim, and he goes back towards Egypt. He takes the Mate Elokim, the staff of God, in his hands. And then a little bit later, we're told the following. Get the exact words. Oh, I skipped. Here we go. We're told the following. Here we go. Vatikach Tzipora Tzor, Vatichros Esarlas Bina, Vatagala Raglacha. Because what happened? They'd stopped off from Malone, they'd stopped off at some inn. By if Kesheo Hashem, and God somehow encounters Moshe, by Yavakish Hamiso, and God seeks to kill Moshe. Again, this is a very, hard, we don't totally understand what's happening here. Rashi famously tells us that for some reason Moshe delayed in giving a proper Bishvila to his son Eliezer, and he was guilty for that. And it's Tzipora who takes the tzor, right? She takes the some sort of instrument, and she's the one who does the mila. Vatichros es arlas b'nav atagal raglav vatomer ki chasan damim atali. Right, you're somehow this chasan damim. You have, it's got another hard word to translate. You're my husband who's caused this bloodshed to me. It's a very hard interaction, but I just want to just take from this is this idea that she's the one who performs the mila, the circumcision, right? It's gonna be Moshe who's going to tell the Jewish people at the end of his final speech in, to the Jews in Sefer Devarim that they have to circumcise their hearts to God, right? That they're going to have to totally dedicate themselves to God. And he learns about this, perhaps this conviction and this complete dedication to Hashem from his wife, right? It's his wife who demonstrates this to them. So again, this is pattern of the various women in Moshe's life who have this who have this great influence. I want to make two final points, and one relates to Miriam at the end of our parsha, and the other one relates to all the women in general. In this week's parsha, this is the one time that the Torah, in a very profound and in some way distressing way, tells us and informs us that Moshe has a total letdown, that Moshe falls apart, right? That the Jewish people, it's the beginning of the end. Again, they haven't yet sinned with the sin of the Meraglim, but they've begun to complain a couple of times, and Hashem gets angry at them, and they're demanding again food and meat, and it gets overwhelming. Yishma Moshe Asam Bochem. Moshe hears the crying. Mishpachosav, Ish Pesah Olo. Vayichav Hashem, and God is exceedingly angry. V'nei Moshe, and Moshe's eyes, it is evil. Right, these people haven't learned their lesson yet. They've been in the desert for nearly a year, and they haven't gone too far in terms of their connection to God and their trust and faith in God, and it's not good in Moshe's eyes. So listen to what Moshe says, and I never appreciated this until I thought about the influence of the four women in his life. Why have you got God, Moshe says to God, why have you caused such evil to me? Why haven't I found favor in your eyes? You've placed this burden of the people upon me. And now look what he says. Henochi harisius kol amazeh. Did I conceive this entire people? Did I give birth to it? You should say to me, you should carry them in your bosom, like a nursing mother has to take care of her child. I can't do it. What's the imagery that he uses? He uses the imagery of his earliest memories or his imagination of a child, of these women taking care of him. A Moshe would not have survived without the initial efforts of the three women who took care of him, his mother, his sister, and then his adoptive mother. And then later on, he literally almost died if it wasn't for the intervention with his own wife, Tzipora. And Moshe says, do I have to take care of the Jewish people to the extent that these four women took care of me? And he says, Lo chalavi, I can't do it. He chaved me many, it's too difficult for me. And then he says, just kill me. This is what you're going to do to me. Argini narog, get rid of me. If you really care about me, God, so get rid of me. Gloria berasi. Let me not see. Don't see my evil. And so when Moshe makes this comment, am I like a nursing mother? So God doesn't respond to him. But the answer is basically, the answer is yes, you are a nursing mother. As your role is that in terms of taking the people, as you need to think about these four women in your life who did this for you, and now in turn it's your job to do this for the Jewish people. Now, of course, Hashem helps him out. He then gives him the Shivim Ish, the 70 elders, who are going to assist him in this role. But again, what I think was so fascinating is that you have these four women who, in such a significant way, have raised him, have molded him, have shaped him. And now Moshe understands that this is now what he needs to do. Again, he's not necessarily so excited about it, but he understands that this is now his role vis-a-vis the Jewish people. And he's gonna, and I think when you now look at the Torah, the rest of the journey of Moshe, he begins on, he continues to then adopt these strengths that were imparted to him. As Moshe at this point is never gonna complain again like this. Moshe, in fact, is going to become the great defender of the Jewish people. Next week's parsha, when the sin of the spies, Moshe is going to be the one to jump to their defense and to plead with God to save them, just like it was his own mother and sister and then the daughter Paro and his wife Yocheved who had saved him. Right, he's gonna mimic these women who played such a central role in his life, which brings me to my final point. So what's interesting is that of the four women in Moshe's life, which one had the longest connection to Moshe? Which one had the most an ongoing influence with Moshe? So I think the answer is obvious. The answer is it was his sister, and just in terms of time, length of days, right? His mother, again, we don't know exactly at what point, she's no longer in the picture, but it was a limited duration. The daughter of Paro, also a very limited time period. His wife, clearly was much longer. Right, we don't know exactly when he met Tzipporah, but we also know at a certain point, that's this week's parsha, he on some level he distanced himself from Tzipporah. Right, that's part of the criticism of Miriam's criticism towards Moshe in this week's parsha, that that he's taken this woman, this Isha Kushit, and there's a whole discussion what exactly does it mean Isha Kushit, and before Shemal struggle with that. The Nitziv is the way he understands it is that they can't understand why Moshe is not spending more time with Tzipporah. And they say it can't be because she's a non-Jewish woman, Isha Kushit. That can't be the reason because Moshe has married her and she's embraced the Jewish people. Isha Kushit Lakath. Therefore they say, what's the reason why he's separated from her? It must be because God has spoken to him, right? But and then therefore maybe he feels like he has to be always spiritually pure. He has to be. He can never be tamei at any moment. So he can't live intimately with his wife. But if that's the case, we also speak to God. And I saw the Nitziv points out that if it's not referring to them, Miriam and Aaron, then God has spoken to other great people in the past. And they didn't separate from their wives, right? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And so they're very troubled by why is he had this disconnect with his wife. So again, there's a lot more to talk about that. But to me, I just want to stress the point that he, even with his own wife, he has this limited connection. But who does he have this ongoing relationship with? So it's Miriam, right? Miriam has this connection throughout his life, literally from beginning to end. She's the one who follows him as a baby in the river. Right, as a baby, she's the one when the daughter of Paro rescues her, she's the one who interjects. Now she's following him, and then she interjects. And she says, "Hey, bring it, there's a Jewish woman there that can nurse him." She's the one who side by side is leading the Jewish people, right? As Moshe is leading the people in Oz Yashir, it's at the same time, it's Miriam taking the women and also singing Ashir El Hashem Kigoga. And dancing with the women. It's Miriam with Moshe at this point, and I want to emphasize in a second what she's doing here at this point. Or actually, let me get to it right now, and then I'll get to the very last connection. So at this point, what is she doing at this point? And she's criticized at this point. She's right. God is angry at her. He gives her tzaras. So remember, who gets credit for Moshe's birth? So obviously it's a mother and father, but we know Chazal say, right, the Gemara and Sota, it was Miriam who gets all the credit because Amram, as a leader of the Jewish people, the Gemara says, had stopped being intimate with his wife, and all the men had followed because Paro decreed that all the Jewish boys should die, and therefore they said, well, there's no point in having children. They're all going to be killed, slaughtered by the Egyptians, drowned by the Egyptians. And, right, and it's Miriam who comes to her father and says, "You're worse than Paro, right? Paro's trying to just kill the boys. You're killing the boys and the girls." So she brings her parents back together, and the Midrashim very powerfully describe her being at the chuppah and meeting her parents, back to the chuppah to marry each other once again. So, and as a result of them coming back together, Yochebed conceives and Moshe is born. So Miriam is the one who literally allowed Moshe to come into this world, right? And she's the one who's watching him the entire time. And she's the one who, in this moment when he's a leader, she's leading with him, the Jewish people. And it's at this point that she gets disappointed in Moshe, right? She now can't understand why Moshe is separated from his wife, and she's trying to do to Moshe what she did to his father. Or just like she led his Amram back to Yocheved, she's trying to lead Moshe back to Tzipporah. So, and it's at this point God intervenes and says, Miriam, you might mean well, but you misunderstand what's happening here. Right? That's, then again, you had more time, you can go into this, but like God says to Miriam, Lo kena, Moshe is different. Moshe is the exception to the rule. Right, the Rambam says, like, there's no prophet whoever is like Moshe. Moshe, again, is, as it says here, pal peg. God says, I speak to Moshe face to face. It's not in a vision. It's not in a prophecy at night. It's like this direct conversation. So Moshe is different than all other human beings who ever would live. And then Moshe had to have this, this from his own wife, this separation. But Miriam was trying to recreate what she had done years earlier with Amram and Yocheved, with her parents. And again, so she's punished for sort of misreading this. But to conclude, I think just to put this all together. So, and again, I mentioned that all these women, there's this water connection to all these women, right? And like Bayim Chaim, the water of water symbolizes life. And so, you know, we hear of Miriam one more time in the Torah. And when's that last time that we hear of Miriam? At her death, right? In Parshas Chukas, in a few weeks, where the Torah tells us, you know, that it's against the 40th year in the desert. Again, Miriam's been with Moshe from the beginning, literally from his birth, and even before he was born, she allows him to be born. And Batamasha Miriam now dies. The 40th year, she dies. And what are we? What's the next pasuk? Lo haya mayim, there is no water. The water had dried up. Right, the water that's been there all along, that Moshe has always been connected with this water, with these women who have played this role with each, right? Yocheved putting him in the basket in the water, and Miriam watching him by the water, and Paro taking him out of the water, and Moshe all the time doing things with the water of, you know, stretching forth his hands, bringing the plagues and splitting the sea and hitting the rock to bring forth water to the Jewish people, and meeting his wife at the water. So all along they've been on this journey together. Miriam dies, there's no more water. And what happens next? The people, of course, complain. And what does Moshe do? He fails, right? Because Miriam's not there to guide him anymore. Right? God tells Miriam to, right, to God tells Moshe to speak to the rock, and he said he hits the rock. So I just want to suggest that maybe he fails this point because the women who have guided him all along are all now out of the picture. And specifically Miriam, who was always by his side, and always there prompting him and guiding him and encouraging him and together beating the Jewish people. And most of the time doing a great job, and maybe at this one incident, you know, sort of make a mistake. And in this week's parsha by Loscha, at the end of the day, you know, she was his confidant, and she was the one encouraging him and serving as his like surrogate mother throughout his life. When she is gone, so that's when Moshe, you know, is unable to himself properly perform and do what he's supposed to do. And then, you know, that generation comes to an end. The story of, you know, Moshe and his family comes to a close. But I think what you see here is a beautiful pattern that exists not only for these four women in Moshe, but as in Judaism, what we believe, you know, throughout our history is that the critical role of women, right, in the history of the Jewish people, right? Like Mara says, "B'schus nashim zitkanyos, the goal Yisrael mitzrayim, the merit of the righteous women, the Jews were redeemed from Egypt." I think maybe with this presentation, it takes on a whole new understanding that, you know, who are the righteous women? It's these righteous four women who made Moshe into Moshe, right? That the Moshe, the leader of the Jewish people, never would have been the leader of the Jewish people. And, you know, he gets all the credit, but behind the scenes, it's these four women who play this most prominent role in creating a Moshe Rabbeinu and ultimately bringing about Geula, bringing about redemption. Okay, I think there's a lot more here to further look at, and I probably more to expand upon, but I think it's something nice to think about. And again, this critical role that women play in Moshe's lives, and the critical role that women in general play with the history and the development that ultimately it's going to be, God willing, the redemption of the Jewish people. I hope everyone has a wonderful Shabbos.